Hello, welcome to ESL Etc. My name is Dave. Please feel free to check out the website at eseletc.com. You can also email me at eseletc@gmail.com. What I'd like to do today is to kind of go step by step through planning a class. And when I say planning a class, I mean planning a course. I don't mean planning an individual lesson. And I'm certainly not saying that this is how I think everyone should plan classes or organize their courses. I'm only saying this is how I do it, and perhaps some of the methods that I use and ideas that I have about this could be helpful to other teachers. Unfortunately, my teaching over the last couple weeks hasn't been going very, very well. One of the problems is that I'm just getting used to a new system. I'm currently teaching at a college. I'm teaching English for tourism majors at a college in China. And my classes are big with 50 students in each one. And where I was teaching before, when I was teaching in Hawaii, I was teaching much smaller classes, maybe 12 or 14 students. And I was seeing them for more hours per week, 4 hours per week, as opposed to the hour and a half that I'm seeing students with here. And I only had two classes per week, whereas here I have seven different classes. So that makes planning a class very difficult. Instead of trying to communicate what I'm currently doing, which is somewhat confused and not particularly useful, I'm going to instead take you through the way that I used to plan a class. And I realized that the place that I taught before was kind of idyllic in a lot of ways. I had a great deal of flexibility with my curriculum, but I also had a lot of resources and support. I also had small class sizes, so some of what I say might not be applicable to a lot of situations, and some of what I say is not applicable to my current situation either. But a lot of the way that I envision a class and try to get it structured is kind of general, and so I think that the underlying ideas could still be useful in a lot of different teaching environments. One of the other things that's really changed and has forced me to change my teaching style is the limited resources. Here, I can't make copies of things to give students. I used to make a lot of handouts and give a lot of assignments and stuff on paper, and now I'm not able to do that. That's fine. I actually kind of like it that way from an environmental point of view, but at the same time, it's caused me to kind of change the way I do things. Anyways, so what I'm going to do is I'll go step by step through how I plan the class in this kind of imaginary perfect setting of having the resources and the class size and all those things that make it easier. And hopefully some of the things that I do will be applicable to whatever your current teaching situation is. Okay, the thing that got me thinking of this for this week's podcast was that in class, we're starting to talk about doing our final project. I'm teaching oral English classes, and the project that I've decided to have them do is to do some sort of skit or a group presentation. And what I asked them to do for today was to make groups and come up with some topic ideas. We're getting them in groups. That's kind of happening. They didn't really prepare it. A few people did, but most people did it in class today. And same thing with topic ideas. I'm really trying to stress to them how this is a good opportunity for them to take control over their language learning. We're gonna spend a lot of time on this stuff. We're gonna be in the coming weeks, we're going to be working on making scripts or outlines. We're going to be working on grammar stuff. We're going to be working on pronunciation, vocabulary, developing fluency with what they're talking about. So I really want them to choose topics and to use language that's relevant to them, that's going to be useful to them. Unfortunately, the topics that have been chosen so far have been pretty ordinary. And a lot of them have, for example, they're like the role plays that we've done in class and nothing that's particularly, in my opinion, interesting. There have been some exceptions, but a lot of it has been, you know, checking into a hotel or buying souvenirs while traveling, that kind of thing. But I'm hoping that by leaving them some flexibility and doing a lot of the project in class over the weeks, that they'll develop something more interesting and more useful for them, more beneficial for them. As I said, I don't really want to talk about my current class, but this structure of basing a class around a project is very familiar to me. That's how I frequently have taught. When I was teaching in Hawaii, that project, usually with some sort of research project, because we were doing more academic preparation kind of stuff. A couple of my favorites, one that I mentioned, I think on an earlier podcast, was what I termed an individual action project. It was for a class called Global Issues, and what I asked students to do was, over the course of the semester, they chose an issue, and I gave them a great deal of latitude as far as the issue. It certainly did not have to be something we covered in class, and I interpreted global in a very general sense. I asked them to choose an issue, and then to come up with an action or actions that they could do related to that issue. And finally, to do that action, and then their project would be either a paper or presentation telling us about the issue, telling us about the action, and then reflecting upon their experience with the action. And I did that in two different semesters with Global Issues and had some really good results. I've done another project I did was in a cultural issues class, and I did the same project in a sociology class where I asked students to do a similar thing where they chose a topic and then conducted either a survey or did an interview and then analyzed the data and gave their own experience or opinion as part of their project too. So those are the type of projects that I've done. This is different because the project we're doing this term is 100%, well, is almost entirely going to be spoken. I am going to look, I've told them that during week 9 I want to look at the scripts and I want to look at the outlines, but that's really more just to make sure that they're doing something. I'm not really going to grade it for correctness or even for completeness. I just want to make sure that they've started and they've been thinking about it. And I want to be able to help them if they have some sort of grammar or other type of language question. I'm interested in seeing how the performance aspect of this goes. I have a feeling from what I've seen so far that students are going to opt more for the skit than for the presentation, which is fine. And it actually fits in nicely with our larger plans. My girlfriend is planning to offer a class next semester doing environmental education through where the culminating project would be a play. And so I'm hoping that during the course of this semester, I might learn some things about encouraging performance in class that might be useful for that class later on. Okay, it's the first day of class. Usually what I would do is I would want to do some sort of needs/wants analysis. I realize I don't think there's any such thing as a wants analysis, but that's really important to me, especially when my students are adults who are engaged in some sort of optional class. Here it's different because here my students, they're forced to take this class. But even then, you know, student-centered teaching, I want to do what my students are interested in to a point. We also have to do what I think is useful and appropriate for the setting. But I try to do some sort of needs analysis for sure, and I also want to find out what they want. There are a couple ways I do that. One thing is to do some diagnostic activities. I try to do that for two reasons. First of all, I want to let the students know what the class is going to be like. So I want them to do some activities that are indicative of the type of things we'll be doing in the class so they know what to expect. At the same time, I want to see what their levels are. I want to see, now here I don't have the flexibility, but in an ideal situation, I would want to see, do students need to move to a different class? Do they want to change to a different class if they decide that what we're going to be doing isn't appropriate for them? We want to make sure that they're placed at the right levels. And also, as a teacher, you want to know what the range of levels are in your class so that you can tailor the materials to be appropriate for them. A lot of times what I'll do, and I'll put samples of all these different types of activities up on the website, so please check that out. It'll be in the podcast section, so check that out. And I'll put an example, at least one example, of each of these types of materials that I've made, just to give you a sense. And I would love to hear from other teachers or to see samples from other teachers, too. One thing that I try to do with diagnostics a lot of the time is make it relevant to studying or to learning the language. I just think that's a good first day activity or first day topic. The school that I was teaching at before was a content-based school or had a predominantly content-based curriculum. So we needed to, I wanted to do something content-based instead of just doing, you know, introductions or something like that, which is fine, and I've certainly done introductions in some classes, but with higher level students that have been around multiple English classes for a number of years, I tried to give them something a little bit different. Another nice thing to do in terms of getting the needs or the wants of the students is to do a survey. Again, I'll put a sample up on the website. And the survey, I usually ask them a couple of open-ended questions about, just to get them started, about the content that they're interested in within the confines of whatever class that we're talking about and the topics they want to cover. I'll do a follow-up with that. Like, we don't decide that, you know, finally on the first day of class, but I want them to start thinking immediately from the first day about what do they want to talk about in the class. Because in my classes, in a content-based class, I want the content to come from the students as much as it can. In my current teaching, that's limited to an extent because, you know, their major is English for Tourism. So I feel like my responsibility is to try to get them to be doing spoken English, but also to keep them focused kind of on tourism. I think that's going to kind of broaden as the semester goes on. But I want to give them a lot of opportunities to practice tourism situations. With their final projects, though, I am letting them kind of do whatever they want. I had a group today that's interested in talking about celebrities. As long as they're doing it in a way where they're using some new language that they're going to be able to learn that's useful to them, I don't mind that at all. The other thing on the survey that I'll do is I'll have some sort of question asking them to tell me what skills they want to work on, and from that I'll decide what activities we want to do. Again, part of what activities we'll do is going to be dictated by the curriculum, right? If I'm teaching, like now, I'm teaching oral English class, well, we're going to do a lot of speaking. And then the form that can take can be flexible. You know, we can do role plays, we can do debates, we can read dialogues, we can do individual presentations, group presentations, group discussions, pair discussions. There's a lot of different kinds of oral English you can do. And in addition, even when a class is oral English, that doesn't mean that's the only thing we're doing, right? We can also work on vocabulary, work on grammar, work on presentation skills. It's up to the students what's going to be useful for them and what they're interested in. So this is how I do my needs/wants analysis at the beginning of a term. I'll usually take both of those things, the diagnostic. Sometimes I'll give the survey out for homework. But I'll usually try to get them both done in class, take them home, and so that I can really do get a sketch an outline for the class before the next meeting. Yeah, the way that I normally teach, I don't have a real concrete class plan when I walk into the classroom on the first day. I have a lot of ideas in my head, and I certainly have the first day planned out. But I really try to be flexible in my teaching. And I never want to have a rigid idea of the class. I always want to kind of be able to move with what the class seems to need. I realize that a lot of teachers aren't comfortable with that a lot of teachers want the whole semester kind of planned out, all the materials ready. And that's fine. I think there's certainly advantages to doing it that way, too. But for me, I'm comfortable letting the students help me in deciding what we're going to do in the class. Another thing I like to do on the first day of class is some sort of icebreaker. It's hard. In my classes here, with 50 students, I didn't really do that. It would just take too long to have all the students introduce themselves. They asked me if they could, and it's just not feasible to do that. In one of the classes, they asked me. But ordinarily, I would do some sort of icebreaker. So here, the type of icebreaker I would try to do is some sort of group icebreaker where they can get to know each other. Now, again, it doesn't really make sense because at colleges in China, they're with the same classmates in all their classes every year. So they already know each other. So the only type of icebreaker we did was them getting to know me. Another nice thing to do on the first day of class is, if you have a textbook, to look at it. Usually what I'll do is I'll look at table of contents, and then we'll also go quickly through one unit to look at the different pieces of a unit. I do this for two reasons. First of all, again, I want to introduce the students to what we're going to be doing so that they can decide if it's appropriate for what they want or not. And then the second thing is, when they're filling out the survey, when they're telling me what skills they want to work on, I want them to, if they can, be specific and tell me what parts of the textbook they want to use, what units they're interested in, or what exercises they're interested in. The more information I can get, the better I can do at tailoring the class to meet their needs. I have made worksheets to go through looking at a textbook where I ask them to find some things and stuff like that. I think that's a nice idea. I like that. I haven't done that a lot. I'll put an example of one that I made for a social issues class up on the website, but I think that might be the only time I've used a worksheet. Usually I just kind of do it orally. Another thing that I'll give the students on the first day of class is a syllabus. If you look at the syllabus, it's very, in a way, it's very general. I don't think my syllabi are that great. There's too many words on them. I think that they can be really kind of off-putting for students. But I've changed them each time I taught, but I haven't really gotten them to a point that I like. And basically, I'll just go through them with the students, and I think they, at least in Hawaii, they understood them. My students here wouldn't understand the same syllabus, but I still feel like simpler would be better. But you can see, again, part of what the syllabus is doing is to give them a sense of, if you want to work on these skills, here's the type of things you want to do. So it takes them through, you know, if you want to work on listening and speaking, we can do this. To work on writing, we can do this. So that when they're filling out their survey, they can give me specific information about what they're looking for, what they feel they need to work on, that kind of thing. Okay, so that's the first day of class, and that's a lot. I usually teach 2-hour classes, and that's the full 2 hours. But from there, I find I'm really able to get a good sense of the type of class the students need and the type of class that they're looking for. So there are a million different kinds of activities that you can do in classes. Basically, the way I usually imagine a class is after that first day, I want to think of, well, what's going to be the final project? What's going to be the end result of this class? I favor final projects to final exams. Students, it seems like no matter where they are, I think students get enough tests. They don't need any more from me. If I have the flexibility not to give them an exam, I will not give them an exam. The other thing I don't particularly like about exams is I don't think exams help you learn a language. Studying for an exam is different than trying to learn a language. And I don't think exams really teach you anything. The experience of studying for an exam. I understand that exams can measure something. It's kind of irrelevant to me what they measure. I think a good exam maybe would measure English ability. But that's not what I'm interested in grading on in my classes. As you can see from the syllabus, in my classes, I try to grade on effort. The reason is simple. Students can't control their ability. Some students are going to have better English than others. They came in with better English. They're going to leave with better English. There's nothing to do with the work they did in my class. So why should that affect their grade? There's natural language aptitude. There's past experience, you know, did they have a tutor? Did they go to a private language school? There's all sorts of things that can help a student or hurt a student when it comes to their language ability. I want to give them a grade on something that they can control. So I try to have the ability part be a very small part of the grade. It does affect somewhat, you know, if you're grading a presentation and you really can't understand what they're saying, that's going to have to affect their grade. But I try to minimize that as much as I can and to really focus on their effort. Once I've got a concept of what I want to do for the final project, I'll usually present that very early in the term to the students. And I try, a lot of the times, to leave some flexibility in that. So I might, like I said, the earlier examples that I gave of research projects where they were doing either the individual action or a survey or an interview, the final form of the project was up to the students. They could choose, you know, is it going to be written? Is it going to be like an academic report? Is it going to be more of a personal piece of writing? Is it going to be a presentation? And that kind of flexibility is left up to the students. In my class now, it won't be. Well, I take that back, actually. I'm giving them the choice between a more personal or entertaining skit or a more formal academic group presentation. So even though we have to do something spoken, there still is flexibility. And I don't usually ask the students to choose as a class. I usually let individuals choose. And I don't usually ask them to choose very early on. I ask them to choose topics early on, but I don't worry about the form until later in the semester. And it's nice because, again, this helps me to structure the class. As I see what topics people are interested in, I bring those topics into our class. As I see what what type of project, what skills will be required to do the project or the form that they've chosen. Then I try to bring in activities and exercises that will help work on those skills. So that's where, once I've got the final project in place and that ball is rolling, then the rest of the class, I'll try to bring in a lot of activities and a lot of content that will help them work towards that final project, whatever it will be. So in the case of my current class, where our final project is going to be some sort of spoken thing, we're doing role plays, which I think would help, especially with the skit option. We also are doing individual presentations, which could help them with the group presentation. We're doing some, this week I started doing some pronunciation exercises, which I think could help them. And then I'm just going to kind of play it by ear. I'll see what, I want to have them work on stuff in class so I can see what they're having trouble with. And then I can bring in activities that are relevant to that. Another thing that I try to do in my teaching, in addition to trying to bring in activities that I think will be helpful to them, I like to do optional homework. One thing that I don't like is I don't want a student to feel like they want to study English, but they don't know what to do. I want them to feel like they have a lot of options, and if they're in the mood to study English, there's something that they can do. Here it's harder, again, because I don't have the resources. The textbook, I give them some optional reading sometimes from the textbook and encourage them to practice reading things out loud or practicing intonation with the dialogues and stuff like that. I encourage them to write, although I haven't encouraged them to do that recently. I encourage them to talk to their classmates outside of class, but I can't grade anything just because there's too many students, so I'm not getting a lot of student writing. But other types of optional homework I've done, a lot of times when I was teaching in Hawaii, I would ask students or let them do vocabulary journals or reading journals if they wanted to. With vocabulary journals, look, if you're interested in them, look at the handouts that I've put up on the website. I tend to be pretty flexible with my vocabulary journals. Like, the bare minimum would be the word, part of speech, and the definition. Really, though, I encourage my students to at least do the word, part of speech, definition, and try to use the word in a sentence. And then there's a lot of other optional things you could plug in there. They could talk about the family of words, related words. They could write down the sentence that they saw the word in. There's a lot of different ideas on that handout. And I think that I've had students do those kind of vocabulary journals. Personally, I'm not a huge fan. I don't think vocabulary journals are that useful, but a lot of students want to learn vocabulary, and I think that that's a good way to do it, if that's one of your goals. A reading journal is different. Basically, I just ask students to tell me about what they're reading in as much or as little detail as they want, and in as academic or as personal a way as they want. Another thing that I do typically is I'll give the students or ask the students to give me some sort of midterm evaluation so that they can let me know what they like, what they don't like, what they're comfortable with, what they want to change about the class. To be honest, I haven't usually gotten a lot of information from those. I think because I can tell what's going on in the class pretty well, and students are pretty open. You know, I ask them what they think about at different activities, and they'll oftentimes be willing to tell me, so the paper midterm evaluation might not be so necessary, but definitely getting some sort of sense from the students of how things are going and what, if anything, they want to change, I would recommend doing that. And then we just keep working towards the final projects. Well, another reason why I really like projects as opposed to exams is I think students really get a sense of accomplishment. I like them having something that they can really say, I did this, you know, in these 8 weeks or this 16 weeks, I did something. I created something that did not exist before, and it's something that's significant to me. It's something that's worthwhile and that was interesting and that I'm proud of. And a lot of students get that experience. Now, not every student. I mean, of course, some students just kind of slide through and do the minimum, but you're going to have that no matter how you teach your class. But I like giving them the opportunity to really do something that they can think is cool. One thing that I'm gonna do here, as I've kind of mentioned throughout, is I wanna do a lot of it in class. One reason is just practical. Students don't seem to do homework if I give them homework. But the other reason is to really make their projects part of our content. and to really integrate what they're working on with what our class is about. Before I sign off, I want to address a couple of things that are absent from my my class organization. One of the big things that I haven't talked at all about is bringing in specific language elements. For example, when are we going to work on various grammatical elements or sentence patterns or certain pronunciation issues? I don't think about those things when I'm planning a class. Well, that's a bit of an exaggeration. I don't think much about those things. Instead, because of the nature of working in a more content-based place, I tend to deal with those things as they come up. I certainly teach some pronunciation and draw attention to various grammar patterns and try to help students if they have problems or answer any questions that they might have. Basically, the reason I don't teach grammar is because I don't think it really works. It's almost impossible to really tell what grammar feature a student is ready to learn, and when you've got a class of students that are at all different levels, it is impossible to teach grammar features that they're all going to be able to acquire, or that even most of them would be able to acquire. That's another reason why I try to bring a lot of flexibility into my teaching. If I allow students to kind of determine their own content and to generate a lot of their own language, then it'll be at the right level. They'll find stuff that they can understand and they'll take what they can get from that stuff. And I see my role in that as being one, like I said, I help answer questions, or if I notice something that I think, hey, this is something that they're struggling with, then I'll try to help them out. But I don't, yeah, I obviously, if you've listened to this podcast, you know I don't structure my class around, you know, today we're going to teach greetings and tomorrow we're going to teach how to use the present perfect tense and stuff like that. That's the last thing I look at is where do those things fit on the project that we're doing, and how do they come up more naturally in the class. The project is the skeleton the class is kind of draped over. Okay, well, that's all I have for today. Again, please feel free to email me at eseletc@gmail.com or come to the website at eseletc.com. I would love to hear any suggestions that you folks have on planning a class or structuring a class. And I'd also like any questions or difficult situations that you might face in your own teaching. I'd love to hear about those, and maybe I can offer my thoughts and ask other people to offer theirs as well. Thanks very much for listening, and until next time, bye-bye.